Highness. Princess Deandra has had an amazing drag career impersonating her first love, Diana Ross. But she also relishes channeling the two other great entertainers in her holy trinity, Tina Turner and Patti LaBelle. As much as Princess Deandra loves her divas, she cuts them no slack. She just as soon come for those ladies that the HRH in her title might as well stand for, honey, read her.
2 years ago, tabloids went wild when Princess Deandra got into an altercation with Diana Ross that resulted in her having to be escorted out of the building. So imagine what Deandra is like to celebrities she doesn't care for. Photographer David LaChapelle tasted the apple martini she dumped over his head. Madonna felt the coldness of Deandra's shade. And Kathy Lee Gifford got an earful on the phone so hot it made it on TV. Today, Her Royal Highness Princess Deandra joins us to tell the tales of all her adventures performing as a drag entertainer and all the celebrities she loves to read to filth.
Plus, sneaking into Studio 54 as a teenager.
As mother of the House of Ecstasy, what are her thoughts on the final season of Pose?
Filming to Wong Fu with all the top drag queens of the day.
And all the tea Patti LaBelle has on everyone.
Honey, read her. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Hello?
Hi, is this Her Royal Highness Princess Deandra? Did she hang up?
I think she hung up.
Hello?
Hello? Hello, hello?
I think now we have two people on the line.
How many people are with us now, great spirit?
Well, I'm here. How many black people are with you? Oh, that's the question.
Not enough.
We need more.
There's never enough. Well, depending on who you ask. There's never enough.
So is this Her Royal Highness Princess Deandra?
Yes. Yes, that's me.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, Your Majesty. Yes, I'm Fausto.
I'm Mark, Your Majesty.
Hola, Fausto. Feliz cumpleaños.
Ay, gracias, Princess Deandra.
Princesa.
Claro, claro que sí. Princesa, sí.
¿Hablas español también?
No, no, un poquito. I know enough to get me some pinga, but you know how that is.
A mí no me importa si hablas inglés, español, francés o alemán. Puedes encontrarme en mi dressing room.
Claro, después loca, del programa. Claro.
That's a line from Eartha Kitt. When I met Eartha Kitt, she found out that I spoke Spanish and did not want to speak any other language than Spanish with me.
I saw Eartha Kitt a gazillion times in like the 80s. Oh. And then, you know, I love her, but it was the same damn show. I could do it with her, like after the fourth time.
Just like her autobiographies, her memoirs, it was just the same memoir, and she'd add a couple chapters here and there, and re-release it every couple years.
I remember I went one time with Glamour Moore and Connie and just a bunch of queens. We all went to go see Eartha Kitt at the ballroom, I believe.
At the Plaza Hotel?
No, she wasn't at the Plaza at this point. It was during her leaner moment.
Okay.
She was at the ballroom and she said, very interesting table over here.
Did you growl back?
That was fun. No, I just looked. I had a friend that used to do stuff like that with her, and she reprimanded him, and he said it was kind of embarrassing.
Oh, so, don't talk back to Eartha.
You just don't come for. You got to know. You got to stay in your lane.
Like Diana Ross.
Oh, lies.
We'll get to that later.
You know, your name keeps popping up throughout the course of our lives as one of New York City's entertainers.
How long
have I been around in this earth?
Well, how long have I been popping up?
For probably a good 15 years at least. So we've been doing this podcast. This summer is going to be our 3,000th episode. And for years, people have been like, you need to talk to Princess Deandra. She knows the names. She has the receipts. HRH does not stand for Her Royal Highness. It stands for Honey, Read Her. And so, you know, with the Tina Turner documentary, your name popped up again. Misunderstood and Lady Bunny and a bunch of other people are really excited about what you have to say about these divas. But you were in the news not too recently because you got into an altercation with one of your heroes, Diana Ross.
one of my sheroes, one of the members of my living trifecta.
Which you call Frosty.
But they jockey for position.
Yes.
But Tina Turner's number one at the moment. And right. Now Patti LaBelle and Diana Ross can beat each other up for number two. They don't deliver anymore. They just don't. Tina got out of the game early when she couldn't do it anymore. And like, you can't keep coming back trying to do what you did when you were 30, when you're 80. Because it doesn't work. And then you chip away at my fond memories of you. You keep doing it. But anyway, my dear Frosty, who was the first, and she held the title for many, many years until I actually met the hoe in person.
Oh, and my God.
She is very mean. She's very evil. Reach out and touch my ass.
What?
She barks, she yells, she screams, she berates, she belittles people. And I love her like cooked food, but I will call that hoe everything but a cock-sucking dick from Detroit if she comes for me.
And she did come for you, right?
And the fans don't appreciate that. But Diana Ross doesn't pay my bills. Well, she does, but she doesn't directly. Well,
this is what I'm trying to understand. So there was this event. You for years you've been known as one of New York City's entertainers. Let me give you the backstory.
I've loved Diana Ross as long as I can breathe. Like my mother tells an incredible story of how the Supremes were on the Ed Sullivan Show, and I was crawling across the room, and I stopped. And then the Supremes left, and I kept pointing at the TV, crying and crying and crying. And she said, you probably cried to the next time they came back on. But that's when she was like, this little boy loves Miss Ross. And I did, and I from New York, and she lived in New York. Well, they filmed The Wiz in New York, and I followed her around every time they were filming. And I went to go see her for the first time, and like my walls were covered with her. Then I grew up, and before I started doing her. One time I was following her when she was living at the Sherry Netherland. She came out one day. I would go every day after school. I went to the High School of Fashion Industries here in the city. And I would run to the Sherry just to look at her. She was like, oh, you people again. And she went up and she came back and she went, like just like in Mahogany, like she grilled, she put the teeth. She said, get a fucking life.
Oh, my God.
And I did. I never went back. Sometimes if I was walking by, I might, if I saw the car.
What year is this? What year are we talking here?
It was in the early 80s.
So this is when she was at the height of her comeback.
She was at the height of her Diana Rossness. It was Endless Love, Upside Down, all of that.
But it was before she tried to resuscitate her career with RuPaul and drag queens.
I don't even think that was a thing she did.
She
but
did.
Maybe.
Yes.
I mean, okay. I saw the video and I didn't like the song. So right. I wasn't so into it. Like, let Gloria have a song, girl. You have a gazillion songs. That's Gloria's. If you can't do nothing with a remake, leave it the fuck alone. That's what I say.
So in the 1980s, this is when you had your first kind of run in bumping heads with Diana Ross. And then most recently, there was an opening.
There's more.
Okay, Ron Popeil.
Then
set it and forget it. No, don't forget it.
Then I became a dragon.
Yeah.
And I became a very successful dragon.
And you got your golden eggs and Cave of Wonders.
I started doing, well, based on me doing Diana Ross, and I had international travel. I had access to designer clothes, and I was feeling it. So I would go to the concerts dressed as her. And she did not receive that very well. And you know, I'm just in my moment. I'm in my love, and I just want to express it. And then I would like do the thing where she would run down the aisle. And I always had really amazing seats.
Yeah.
So I would run down the aisles in all my Diana Ross regalia, and the crowd would lose it. And then I would spit and then sit in my seat. And they were like, oh, shit, that's not her. And she would come out and she would just scowl at me.
Oh, you stole her thunder.
And then she one of the shows, she wouldn't even perform where I was sitting. So I would go get a drink, you know, during Missing You, because she don't give a fuck about none of those people she was singing about. I didn't like the song. Like, oh, really, girl? Really? So I went to get a drink, and I come back, and the crowd's like, why did you come back? Because she performed over here when you left. Fuck you, drag queen. I'm like, oh, my goodness. So during this particular set, my feelings are really hurt. As a Lifetime fan, like, your idol does that to you. I was crushed. I was crushed. I was demoralized. So the next day I came in full 60s Diana drag, because I had a show that night, and I was sitting in the first row, and I carried the bush, and I was going to burn it and throw it on stage.
Like, you carried what?
The bush, like the big hair. Ah, I'll call that the bush.
All right.
So I was going to burn it and throw it on stage. Like, you want to fuck with me? You fuck with the wrong queen.
Drag terrorism.
She has a way of, like, knowing that, you know, she has a hold on you. She's like, this queen is mad. Let me be nice to her. So she calls me up on stage. She goes, ladies and gentlemen, this is me. And I was like, lies, I'm like going up, lies. My friend's like, go up, she's calling you up, go. So I go up on stage. And, you know, she's sweet and lovely. And I do my shows. And, you know, I sit down like, I love you, Frosty. So then she's like singing, coming to the front, trying to touch people's hands. And she tries to touch my roommate's hand. And she looks and says, oh, you're with her. Like, she didn't say it, but the look was, oh, you're with her. And she snatches her hand away, like, nope, I'm not touching you. Oh, and I'm like, word, Frosty, word! I love when she's frosty, but not to me. I want to be on the receiving end of it, but I love seeing it. So one more good story, because I got about 20 of them. So the next time she came, the next time she came to New York, probably about a year later, maybe? What happened? Oh, so my friend was working for Jackie Rogers,
yeah,
which was one of her personal designers. Jackie Rogers was a Chanel model muse. And I heard it was also a girlfriend, but we ain't going to tell nobody that. And he was her right hand, and Diana Ross wore a dress by Jackie Rogers to the Oscars,
yeah,
in 1990. He gave me the sample of the dress.
Ooh.
I could fit a sample. Can't fit that bitch now, but I could fit a sample in 1990. So I went to the concert. She was on Arsenio Hall with the straight hair.
Yeah.
I had a human hair done by Matthew Caston. It was like really straight, and I had the dress on. I arrive at Radio City, and Andre Leontali says, you look fabulous. I must get you a drink. So who's going to say no to that? So I'm at the bar with Andre. Then Naomi Campbell comes running up. She goes, hi, Princess Deandra. I never met that bitch. So I was very like, hi. And she says, Andre, the show's going to start. Andre. He goes, can't you see I'm talking to Deandra? You wait. So I'm like, wow. Then my friend comes. Girl, let's go. Girl, let's go. So I went. Frosty had started already. Fuck. So I go to my second row seat, and there are some people in my seats. So I'm like, get out of my goddamn seats! Go to the balcony where you belong! Get up! So Diana says on the mic, oh God, she's here.
So Diana Ross knows who you are. And
she knows, yeah, of me, but yeah. Hold on, then we'll get to the Pope Gate. We'll get to Pope Gate. And she goes, okay, she wants some attention. All right, girl, come up, come up. I didn't hear that. And my friends go, go up. She called you, go. So I run up on stage. And then, you know, Radio City Music Hall is so incredible looking. And I just looked up like, wow, what a beautiful room. Diana says, well, who are you supposed to be tonight? Naomi Campbell? I stop. And I go back to her. I walk back over because I'm prancing on the stage because I'm just like, wow. And I whisper in her ear, no, I'm you with the hair you wore on Arsenio Hall and the dress you wore to the Oscars. And she squinted and looked at the dress and her eyes bulged out like, you have got to be kidding. So then she said, all right, something, some bullshit. And then she was like, okay. And I hugged her and I said, what are you wearing? She goes, she puts the mic down and goes, you think I'm going to tell you that? So you're going to run out and get that too? Now go to your seat and behave.
Mother
Ross. And of course I did. Mother said to behave, and I did behave. Mm. So fast forward, one more story. I was doing Diana Ross at the Supper Club in New York City for the Lacoste show. It ran for maybe a year and a half, and the producers came to me and said, Rhonda Ross is performing here on Friday. Can you please come dressed as Diana Ross? Because it'll be great publicity for our show. Sure, why not? So I had the cat suit look. The big hair, a big, you know, fuzzy coat. And I was late. I used to be really late back then. I've gotten that together now. So I go to the show and I watch the show and everybody's looking back and looking back and looking back. So in the end, everybody leaves and Rhonda's drinking with the band and we're there. And they kept talking and looking at me, talking and looking at me. So my friend says, they're talking about you. They're talking about you. I go, well, they can say it to my face because I'll read that bitch. At least my mother didn't have a child and pretend it was some white man's. And then like thinking of all the things I can say to read her, she's coming for me. But then she just went, Mom. Long story short, aww. I went over to her. I had like a 2-hour conversation with Rhonda. That was the realest bitch I ever met because I hadn't met Tracy before. No bueno. But Rhonda was real as rain and incredible. And then Rhonda said, can you please come see me at my show at Tattoo? I'm going to be at Tattoo next week. So I was like, well, I'm personally thinking, well, seeing you here was enough for me. It wasn't very overwhelming. But if you invite me, you know, she invites me, I'll go.
Yeah. Some shows are so good, you only need to see them once.
She said, can you please not come dressed as my mom?
Oh.
And I went, oh, does that offend you? She goes, no, not at all. But you're a performer. Now, when you came in tonight, everyone kept looking back at you for the first 15 minutes of the show. Imagine if someone did that at your show. They would ruin the rhythm of your show. I started shrinking like the witch in the Wizard of Oz when they threw the water on the bitch. Because it hit me why Diana was mean to me. I was like, I didn't mean to do that. And she was like, bingo, you got it? I kind of saying, don't try it with my mother no more, faggot, because it's not cute.
This is a conversation you're having with Diana Ross's daughter and Barry.
Her daughter.
She's the daughter of Barry Gordy and Diana Ross.
Love child.
Yeah.
Never meant to be. Well, she was meant to be. Diana thought that was
that's
a ticket
Rhonda
to get
Ross
married.
Kendrick. Yeah,
that's Rhonda Ross Kendrick. Yeah. Amazing. All right, so then I got it. So one more story, then we get to Poke Game. So fast forward.
So all right, by this time Diana Ross has a dossier on you.
Wait, this is the best one. So fast forward, maybe 3 more years, 4 more years, 2 more years. I don't know. So now I went to go live in Israel. When I came back from the Holy Land, my writer friend was like, oh, I have tickets to Diana Ross at Radio City. Do you want to go? I was like, no, she don't feel me. It's all right. He said, well, I'm not going to go. I'm not saying come with me. I'm going to give you the tickets. I'm like, oh, well, I'll go. So I got dolled up. You know, I had to Take Me Higher was the song she was promoting.
Yeah.
So I had the look of the video. The shorter hair, the slip dress, I had some blonics. So I went with my good friend Richard, and we went to the show. Amazing seats. They were free. I didn't grandstand. I just walked in, sat in my seat like everyone else. During the show, Tracy and Evan were going to the bathroom. Evan saw me and stopped and tugged at Tracy and pointed. And she looked and whispered in his ear, and they went along. They came back, she tapped me on the shoulder and said, you look amazing. I'm like, thank you. And off they went. Diana came off the stage and came to sing with me. She's singing one of those songs from the album. In recent years, you ain't listening to them songs. I didn't know that goddamn song. She's singing Love Whatever. And I said, I don't know the words. You sing. sing and I'll imitate you. And she was singing and I started doing her isms. The crowd lost it. She hugged me. It was a beautiful moment. So we're sitting there, me and my friend, like, wow, that was great. Then some woman comes up and says, "Hi, I'm so-and-so. Would you like to go to Diana's after party at the Motown Cafe?" Would I? Fast forward. Somebody in the crowd gives us the lift in their limousine. That was fabulous. I arrived. They were like, "You're not on the list." And I'm like, I'm going to have to turn and walk away. How embarrassing. 10-9-8 RuPaul shows up and goes, "She's with me." Like, thank you. So we go into the party. So it's so many famous people there. That's not important. So RuPaul, I'm watching RuPaul have this moment with Diana. Like, Diana is in this like booth with a rope in front of the booth and two bodyguards. So everybody has to be approved by her to get in the rope. So if RuPaul comes out of the rope, I go, "I want to go talk to her." "Okay, what did you talk about?" RuPaul said, "Nothing. She's a little sauced. But, you know, go in there and have your moment." Like, she's going to say lies. So I go over and I'm like, "Diana?" She looks at me and snaps her head away, like, lies. I'm like, "Oh, I'll be damned. I will get thrown out of here." I'm like, "Diana, Miss Ross, Diana." And she turns around and she goes, you, get in here. Get in here right now. Get in here." Security opens the rope. We have a moment. We hug, we kiss. She is drunk off her ass. And I'm living because it's just gorgeous to see, you know, your idol, like, be freer and looser and not so shady. And then she's like, "You look amazing. And you're in those shoes. And how do you do it?" "Because my feet hurt." I said, "Well, then let's switch shoes." She said, no, because mine are small, too small. I go, "No, we wear the same size, an 8.5. She gagged. She looked me up and down like, "How the fuck a big old bitch like you wear an 8.5? And then she kind of got it and was like, "Okay, like, enough of you, get out." And she gives you the hug and then security opens the rope. And then that's how I got the picture of us together.
Yeah.
And that was the last time she was nice to me. The one and the only and the last time. I'm done. Ask me anything you want.
When did the incident happen? Did it happen before that?
No, that's new. That happened like a year ago.
So, yeah, yeah.
A year and change ago.
So how long? So that the incident happened a year ago. What's the time frame between like the last time you saw her and then the incident, the poke gate?
Oh, I saw her another time. I went to see the Supremes reunion tour and I heckled because I thought it was disgusting.
Why? What did you not like about it?
Where was Marianne Wilson and Cindy Birdsong? They were alive. It's not like they were dead. Like, who were those other two bitches you never worked with? How dare you? Sorry.
Well, I mean, you know, Dreamgirls was written for a reason.
know, oh, honey. That's a whole nother hour, honey.
So what we're trying to get to the point is understand here, how were you able to get on stage and get into a physical altercation with her?
Okay, I was invited to the party.
Yes.
And, you know, details are unimportant.
Yes.
And the Sheik went on, and I'm like, oh, she's not going to come. Sheik is not Diana Ross. How dare you? This is some bullshit. So I wandered off. Uh-huh. And there was a big, huge hotel opening. They had hired like the 10 best supermodels. And I read all of this later because I saw the supermodels there, like that Kendall Jenner and one of the Hadid sister, a few of them.
Now, were you in drag?
No drag. Mm-hmm. And so they were having this photo shoot in a green room. The door was open and people would come and there was a green screen and a photographer and the lights and a table full of champagne. So I went in there and I made a drink and I watched the photo shoot, took a second glass. I went back to watch the concert of the Sheik. I liked Sheik growing up, so it was good to hear the music. And I'm like, I want another drink. So I went. This time, I took the bottle.
To clarify, Sheik is Nile Rodgers' band.
Nile Rodgers' band. Yeah. Nile Rodgers is the soul.
Says Sheik.
La Freak. Yeah. And just, he wrote Upside Down, I'm Coming Out.
He wrote all the songs of the 80s. Like, every hit song he was involved in.
He did things for Bowie. Madonna, unfortunately, he did something with Madudu. And yeah,
you don't, you're so not anyway. Minch. Yeah, and worked with Ginger Minch. But so it, in terms of like this incident, so you were not in drag, and I guess
I was not in drag,
and you got into a situation where Diana Ross was like literally kind of like poking you in her elbow, right?
No, I poked her.
You poked her with your finger in her eye, or what'd you do? What happened?
Here it is. Yeah, here it is. This is the wrap up. So three bottles of champagne later, I go back to you know, the crowd. And Nile Rodgers says, I have a bottle of champagne in my hand. And I'm pouring. People are going, oh, give me some. I'm sharing. You know, it's a bottle. And I'm pretty lit at this point, as you can well imagine. And Nile Rodgers said, we have a very special guest about to come out. And you guys are going to lose your mind. I see my friend Maggie James. And Maggie's like, oh, Deandra! We hug, we kiss, we laugh, and then I hear, I'm coming! And of course, I lost my ever-loving mind. I barreled through the crowd like a freed slave, honey. to the front. My kneecaps are touching, you know, the edge of the stage. And then she comes running out, and I'm like, she looks great. Wow, how old is she? And I'm 5 years old. And I'm just like, I'm like, touch me, just smile at me, something. She is in the zone. She's looking straight. I guess it's a sort of automatic pilot that people probably that perform a lot get. And she's not looking to the left, to the right. She's just looking straight. And she's just singing, like she's concentrating on the world, which I don't get. Like, I'm looking like, how many fucking times have you done this? And you have this level of concentration? All right, so I'm trying to get her attention. And then I get to, like, you're ignoring me on purpose? Well, I'm not that little 15-year-old that you told to get a fucking life. And I'm like, Frosty, poke. Poked her.
You kinda poked her with your finger, like in her, like in the
with
middle of her chest.
My finger. I could send you the picture.
In her head,
there's photos of it.
Actually, it was filmed. It made news, honey.
Yeah, it was all really over the tabloid press. The drag queen that assaulted her, Diana Ross.
Actually, I poked her like on the side, on the hip bone.
Okay, so you were just trying to like get her physical attention.
Get her attention.
Yeah,
she was, like, she was hit her on the hand,
happy.
But
yeah. And so she was when the security came and called you out.
She was not. Let me explain that too, because it's fabulous. She was not living, and it snapped her. It snapped her out of the zone. Like, she snapped, and she looked at me like, "How fucking dare you?" And she reached her hand back to mock hit me. And she didn't. I wish she would have hit me. That would have been gorgeous. Oh, I would have lived.
My diva hit me and it felt like a kiss.
And then I realized what I had done. So I backed up. I backed up like three people back. Because I was like, oh no, you poked her, Miss Thing. Why'd you poke her? 10-9-8, these two gorgeous brothers came and said, hi, can you come with us, please? I was like, I won't do it again. I'm sorry. They go, it's all right. Just come with us. And I was like, wow, because you come with us. And I still got a glass of champagne, mind you. And I'm like, wow, you guys are beautiful. Too bad we couldn't have met under different circumstances. They laughed. And we were just talking. They were talking about whatever with me and joking around. And 10-9-8, my black ass was on the street.
Oh.
And I went, I just got thrown out. Then I went, that was the most civilized throat I've ever been in my life. And then I kind of walked down the street and started calling people. And by the time I woke up the next morning, baby, it was news.
Page six.
So that's that.
Who was the first person you called?
I called Dina Marie, my friend Dina Delicious. Because we worked at Lucky Chang's together and we always got in sort of trouble when we were little inebriated. And her advice was just go home, Mary, and sleep it off. Don't post, don't do anything. And she was right. But I felt like garbage for like a couple of days. But
you had that negative experience. But I do, and this is what I'm attracted to you about, is that you have this really big, beautiful heart, and that despite all these like obstacles or circumstances, you always seem to find the humor and the love in it.
I'm so glad you noticed that, because people, when I tell the story, people go, then why do you follow her so many years? And I go, because I love her. She's just my idol from childhood. And I forgot one other little short story. I'm not going to give you the full. I got hired to go to Japan to promote her concerts in 1989. And I flew back on the same plane with her.
Wow.
And she came on the plane. She had the whole first class.
Yeah.
And so she had one ticket and the whole first class. So, of course, she walked around the metal detector. Remember those?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she was, they wouldn't let her aboard. And I'm standing there just staring at her like, oh, my God. And she's like, oh, this annoying faggot. And she said to the woman, why am I standing here? And the woman's trying to explain to her, like, where's the other 30 people you're with? And she started screaming at the top of her lungs. And then people noticed it was her. She was like, get away from me! And I was standing there with my mouth open like, it's true. It's all true. She's evil. Yeah, she's pretty evil.
So I've heard with Diana Ross, like, getting in first class on basically a commercial airlines...
It was 1989. But and, what,
is she,
know,
like, what is she going to do? Like, is she going to put a paper bag over her head as people walk past it? Or was it in another direction?
Oh, that's what you mean. Yeah. And you know the thing that I marveled at the most? She was holding that youngest son, who's like 30-something now.
Yeah.
And he didn't flinch. He didn't flinch.
He was used to it.
And I was like, he's used to it. Yeah. That's exactly what I said. He's used to it. Because she was screaming at the top of her lungs in Narita Airport in Tokyo, Japan. I seen it with my own eyes. I seen it.
So she wrote in first class, it was just her and her son and nobody else, or her crew was with her?
No, it was her son, the band, the assistant, her sister.
Okay.
And during the flight, I went up to go peek in the curtain, and she saw me, and she got up and snatched it.
No.
And like, she does that thing, that mahogany thing where she clenches her teeth and throws her head back. And I'm like, wow, that really is you. I love it.
Because I'm a winner, frosty. Baby, and you're a loser.
And I'm a winner, baby, and you're in coach, and I'm in first class.
Now, Princess Deandra, I'm kind of curious about your own origins, because you're a New York native. You grew up in Brooklyn.
I'm a native New Yorker.
Right.
Born and raised in Brooklyn. I was born in Brooklyn Jewish Hospital, which is a condominium now.
And so in you were sort of coming of age at a time when rent is cheap in New York City, and there was like a drag explosion that, you know, Lady Bunny, RuPaul, Misunderstood, in the recent book of drag that Linda Simpson came out.
The Drag Explosion.
The Drag Explosion sort of documents and captures moments.
Yeah, I don't think I'm exploded. In there, and I didn't think Linda didn't like me, but I'm thinking, well, I was there, bitch. No pictures of me?
They all have nice things to say about you. Doesn't mean they don't like you or like you.
Well, they better, because they're all scared of me, because I'll tell them what the fuck they look like in their face.
But you were already on the scene, like when Bunny and RuPaul came up from Atlanta?
No, it was around the same time.
Okay.
We all kind of started off together.
But you had a lot more success and were getting booked in overseas in Japan and other countries before Rue got big with Supermodel. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I remember.
So
I remember, like,
you were the star and RuPaul was your fan.
I never ever see that. RuPaul was a good friend of mine, actually. Yeah. After she had just made it, she came over to my friend's house. Mm-hmm. My friend's law, she was a rich friend. And she copied all of my Diana Ross tapes. All of them.
Aww.
Like hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. Because
that's why Diana Ross is mad at you. You're giving her music away for free. To RuPaul. And probably RuPaul went to Diana Ross and said, I got all this stuff for free from Princess Deandra. You know?
It was videotapes. Nah. It was videotapes. Clarify that. Because I was the only video drone back in the day.
We were
like really cool, and then
she
got famous and never looked back. I don't think I've spoken to her since.
Really? Well, you'd expect her.
I don't have an evil thought about her, but God bless her.
But when you got into the hotel party with Diana Ross, RuPaul said that she's
was
with me.
That was literally like a month before, so it wasn't okay, like so a long, around the same time.
I see.
Yeah, she was famous at this point when she copied the tapes.
And so, you know, with your early success, it's like, you know, a lot of people sort of like saw you as like what drag could become, which is that you were sort of like touring the world and doing performances, paying tribute to these divas and being this entertainer. And then, you know, then of course the rest is herstory, right? With Drag Race and RuPaul and so on.
No, with RuPaul being famous, I remember there was a handful of drag queens.
Yeah.
Like not more than two dozen, and two dozen, I'm being generous. RuPaul became famous from Supermodel.
Right.
And it was like somebody poured water on the gremlins at night and fed them, because you looked up and every other sissy that could fit women's clothes was in drag. And the trailblazers were going, what the actual fuck? And then that kind of died down like in the latter 90s, early 2000s. But then when the Drag Race started, it's just more, even because there's so many rotten queens. I hate bad drag. I really hate bad drag.
What is bad drag? If you're going to do drag,
I'm not going to call out names. I'm not going to call out.
Describe the behavior.
I let the kids be just putting on women's clothes and makeup without a thought. Mm. Without a thought. You have no reference. What are you actually coming for? Just because you have on a wig and makeup, women's clothes and high heels, you think you're turning it? Really?
So you question and their intention.
I question their look, their feeling, their intention. What are you trying to say? What are you giving? All of the above.
So Princess Deandra in Brooklyn, when you first started dressing up in drag in New York and before you became a boy bar beauty, what was it that it was inspiring you to dress up and drag and perform?
Nothing at all, because I met Connie Girl, who I just thought was like the freak of the week when I first laid eyes on her. I had a very conservative nature, and people that I knew her, and I'm like, you know that person? Does she know that she's what she looks like? And I'm like, Connie's fabulous. Of course she is. I got to know that later. And she was my first introduction. And she would go, oh, come see me at the boy bar. And she was fucking entertaining beyond. Like, I'm like, this is fabulous. Then Glamour Moore, who actually went to my high school, who I didn't speak to because she was strange, was like performing with her. And then Connie would always go, you should perform. You should perform with us. And then she took my hand one day. We were at garage. And she was like, oh, your hands are so tiny. And your feet. Oh, she goes, bitch, you're a drag queen. You're a drag queen. Later that night, they were playing Love Hangover. And of course, I did every lick, every move, everything. She's like, bitch, you're a drag queen. Stop the madness. So about a year later, I did Diana for Halloween, and I went to the Halloween party at Boy Bar, and Matthew said, who is that? Oh, that's my friend, Sensational. My first name begins with an S. You'll never know it unless you are a passport control. That's my friend, Sensational. Let's book him. He's not going to do it. So Matthew came to ask me himself, and I was kind of overwhelmed that he would ask me. So I'm like, sure, why not? And November 1st, I got on stage and I did Ain't No Party from Dreamgirls and I Am Woman by Frosty. Well, the Supremes sing Funny Girl, like her version of I Am Woman, You Are Man. Da-da-da-da. And Perfidia made her debut on the same night.
Oh, wow.
So look at there.
And of course, people know Perfidia from Cooking with Drag Queens and, of course, being the wig stylist for many, many Broadway shows, including Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Many, many Broadway shows. And she had Wig World at Patricia Fields in the 90s.
Right.
That was huge.
Yeah, you see that in the movie Wigstock, right? Now, for the listeners out there that might not be familiar, you dropped a couple of names, Connie Girl and Matthew Kasten. Can you tell people a little bit about those people?
Well, Connie Girl is the trailblazer du jour. She is a muse, a fashion model, an illustrator, and just a door queen, and just an all-in-all great human being. She's one of my favorite people in the world. And Matthew Kasten was the impresario of the boy bar. Mm. And he would take the raw talent and dress them up and do the hairs and say, do this, do this, do that, do that. But I saw he never said this to me as, you know, it was transpiring, but he's written that I was the one queen that came that he didn't have to tell to do anything.
Oh, wow.
And he didn't.
And Glamour Moore now has moved on to San Francisco and performs regularly.
Glamour Moore has a book coming out. And Glamour Moore is running for the Emperor of San Francisco in that court thingy that they do.
Yeah.
And Glamour Moore is a genius costumer. But genius, that queen can make a frock, I tell you. That queen could make a frock. Also a brilliant genius, wonderful person.
And has a whole very family happy like that I know. Sylvia Safermore, I think the Moore family,
the
right?
Moores.
Yeah,
the Moores. Juanita, honey, the mother of the house of Moore, the best dressed drag queen in the world, in my opinion. Because that bitch has over 3,000 costumes.
Well, besides the club scene in New York City for drag, there also is the legendary houses. Were you a part of the ballroom scene?
Oh, darling, did you not see the flyer I sent you? I actually was a house mother. I had a house.
What was the name of your house?
The House of Ecstasy. You can do all the inferences you want. That's all I'm saying. I started doing balls because there was like, well, Myra was a good friend of mine who took me to my very first ball.
Yeah.
When I first came out, I hung around queens that was like, ugh, those peer queens, ugh, balls. So, of course, you're like influenced by that. And then I would kind of look at them kind of like, they're interesting. But yeah. I was told, stand back, Buenos Aires. So, before Myra, I had no interest. No, like, nope.
Yeah.
So, Myra took me to a ball early one morning after Garage ended, like at some ungodly hour of a Sunday morning. And I said, this is fabulous. How do I do this? And not only did I do it, I got my own house. I used to win trophies. And as soon as they loved me, they turned on me. Now, when I'm walking in head-to-toe Mugler, and I get to the table, and you're going to give me a chop or a busted, I said, bitch, what are you wearing? Get up. Let them see what you're wearing. They would go, no, DeAndre, you can't argue with the judges. And I'm like, you are in no position to judge me. So one of the participants came to me and said, the reason that they did that to you, and they did it to Connie, they did it to Cody, it was a bunch of us downtown queens. Like, we were all getting chopped or getting busted for a score. Said, you guys, and this is so profound to me, days and days later, I was thinking this. He said to me, you guys are actually living the life for these ball children. It's their fantasy. You guys are, your reality. So they're kind of mad. How dare you come with your fabulousness to show us up? And I was like, I'll never be back. Thank you for telling me. But of course, I'm sure that's not the same today. And I'm happy that they have the exposure, because I love when people take subcultures and shine a light on them, because there's people in pockets of the globe that have no clue about that world.
Well, and I feel like with the TV show Pose, you know, certainly the documentary.
Well, I was referring to Pose. That's what I was preferring to. I think Paris is Burning was great, but it seems a little depressing to me because everybody dies.
Mm-hmm. Honey, they died before the movie was even released. Mm-hmm. There's a dead body in a box.
I sent you the one picture because I love Dorian Corey, honey. She was one of my favorite people from that world. And I lived in Midtown, and I would hang out at the bar where she essentially lived.
Yeah.
And I would go to after hours and listen to that bitch tell stories. And she told me so many stories. She didn't tell me the one about the body in the bag, but she told me many, many stories. And I love a good old sage queen. Mm-hmm. Liv. Mm. I guess I'm becoming one. Oops. Dorian, is that you?
She's haunting you now.
I guess I was getting ready to say, I guess I'm becoming one myself, but you know.
It is heartbreaking that this is going to be the third and final season of Pose. And yeah, well, you know, it's been such a wonderful show. And I feel like, at the very least, give Dominique Jackson a spinoff. I would watch a whole series about Electra Abundance.
I think all of them are going to do well because I see they're all doing different things. And like that one, somebody, Ross, she's like an activist and she's doing great things for LGBT women and with education and teaching them skills and such.
She does the trans tech. Angelica.
Trans Tech Summit.
That's it. That's one of her programs.
Look at you, bitches. You know, that's it.
Oh, there
you
go. She got ladies and gentlemen, PayPal money.
They be knowing.
She got Peter Thiel's phone number.
Wow.
That's how we met Angelica Ross, actually. We ran into her, and I was like, girl, I'm a big fan of yours from the web series Her Story. And she's like, she was really like shocked that this big old faggot knew exactly who she was. And so we were there with her and T.S. Madison for Cooking with Drag Queens.
T.S. Madison.
Who's now a huge star.
Oh, and she was the keynote speaker.
So happy for her.
And you got to give props to Angelica for being like, we're going to hire this black trans sex worker to give us our keynote speaker at the Trans Tech Summit. And PayPal is going to pay for it.
And so T.S. Madison is standing on the stage and she's like telling these young LGBTQ folks, mostly non-binary, queer, trans,
She's saying to them, suck a dick.
Exactly.
She's saying 520s make 100.
She goes, you don't think, which means like, you think it's a little bit, but you get 520s, that's $100.
I love her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been really, really enjoying watching her reality TV show, The T.S. Madison Experience, which
honey, Miss Mary is just the breakout star.
Yeah.
She's always been sweet. A good, like I have some friends that had those supportive mothers and I have some that don't.
Yeah.
So I find that that's very rare and very beautiful and it's unique and fabulous when the mother embraces the child. It's just my child. Mm.
It does, you know, I was listening to you on one talk show talking about Billy Porter and the host kept saying like, Billy Porter is very talented, but, and he was kind of like throwing some shade Billy Porter's way, saying he was.
I love Billy Porter.
Yeah, he was throwing. I
absolutely agree. Billy Porter is talented.
Well, let me just say what he was going to say. The guy was saying that Billy Porter was doing himself a disservice by dressing up and going a little extra on the red carpet. And I'm like, have you ever heard of Lady Gaga? No one thinks about Lady Gaga any less because she dresses up.
I kind of said, I know of what you're speaking. And I said, well, Patti LaBelle did the same thing with LaBelle. Like, look at us. Now listen to us. Mm. I get that.
Yeah.
So once you get people to look and listen, even Lady Gaga stepped back a little from the gimmicks. Because sometimes the gimmicks can't outshine the talent.
Right.
But for many years, that was Lady Gaga. I couldn't take, like, the first gimmick or three, you go, work, or then you go, really, girl? Really,
listen,
girl?
I gotta tell you, that meat made a delicious sandwich.
But then, I tell you, I saw Lady Gaga performing with Tony Bennett. Yeah. And she was in this Liza Minnelli mode, and I fell in love. I'm like, that bitch has talent. That is a talented hoe right there. So I kind of appreciate her when she's not so gimmicky because, you know, some of those gimmicks don't look so great, but that's just me.
What is it, the experience of seeing so much of your life become legend in the sense of pose, in the sense of the success of Drag Race, of course, and Wigstock? And, you know, the world seems really, really fascinated about
it. I'm very happy about it. Mm-hmm. The only thing I just go, maybe if I was just born 30 years later, I could be getting some real coin for it. Other than that, I'm really happy that these kids have their moment in the sun. I'm not mad. I'm not jealous. I'm very happy for all of them.
You know, Eartha Kitt is listening to you from heaven. She says, would you like to be born 30 years earlier than you were?
Yeah. Oh, that too. Oh, actually, maybe not, because that civil rights era, I couldn't have felt that.
Listen, Eartha suffered a lot, you know, and she had a basically.
Eartha is one of those talents for me.
Yeah.
That when I was very, very, very young, and I would see, like, I was an MGM sissy from before Frosty, probably hand in hand. Mm-hmm. I stayed up all night long watching MGM movies on The Late Show, The Late Late Show, mm-hmm. The Late 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 Show. Then it was time to go to school. I would be like, oh. But I was just filled with this wonder, like, this is so fabulous. Oh my God, Sid Charisse and Catherine, that one. I really love Sid Charisse. Ann Miller, Sid Charisse were like my faves. Judy Garland, please, Judy Garland, worship. And then that Lena Horne came on and I lost my mind. I'm like, she's black. Black people make movies? Like, you know, you kind of accept the world as it is. And then it became like my life's mission to find out any black person that was ever in a movie or done anything fabulous like that. When I'm very young, I spent many, many, many hours in the library, like researching these people. And it struck me that talent doesn't always prevail. And that is one of the things that hurts me when I see someone like Eartha, like Alina. Like, what could have happened if they were given the same opportunities as, you know, their white contemporaries? So,
you know, it is very frustrating, and certainly that's a story that I can relate to as well, you know, and a lot of people listening to the show can relate to. But if any consolation I can give out there is that sometimes when you're doing it right, no one will ever notice you've done anything at all.
Okay.
And by that, I mean, it's like you don't need to be this big, giant celebrity, the star, to make an impact on the world. Sometimes the act of kindness and compassion that we can give to one person can be enough.
Wow. Well, just like Doreen Corey so eloquently said in Paris is Burning, everybody wants to leave a mark, you know, be noticed, get some attention.
Now,
people wanted to be Marlena Dietrich. I wanted to be Lena Horne. Me too, girl. I screamed when she said that in the theater. And then she said, if you shoot an arrow and it goes real far, hooray for you. No. Genius.
You were in a movie with Misunderstood, Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar.
Yeah. And I was we were in different scenes, but yeah.
You're at the end of the movie where Julie Newmar actually makes an appearance. And it struck me watching the movie again the other day that they basically named the movie because they could get Julie Newmar, who the other Catwoman from Batman, to make a cameo. So you were in this movie with Misunderstood, and Misunderstood asked us to ask you about a certain entertainer.
Kathy Lee Gifford. And for people that don't know Kathy Lee Gifford, she's a morning talk show or morning news kind of anchor on a morning show. But before that, her start, she was like a gospel singer, like on 700 Club or something.
Okay. When I was living in the East Village with my good sister, Patricia Jardinez, we called her Patrica.
Yeah.
We would go to after hours. We would be full, fill in the blanks. You know what full means. We were, you know, drunk. Lifted. And so it's the afternoon. No one's going to sleep yet. We would do things. We would do things. Mm. One particular day, there was a telethon on. And it's Kathy Lee Gifford spewing her lunacy. I particularly never really liked her. Like, she was on that morning show. And she was just one of those annoying people.
Yeah.
Just and then my son Cassidy and my daughter and my daughter, whatever the fuck her name is. Shut up, Miss Sting. Who gives a fuck? So he was on the telethon. And I think Pat dared me to call. Or did I do it on my own? I don't know how it happened. But I think I just decided I'm gonna call. I'm gonna curse this bitch out. So I pick up the phone and I call and I'm like, hello. I'd like to make a rather large donation because I think your cause is exemplary. And, you know, I'm a philanthropist and I like to spread my wealth and only under one condition. I'd like to speak with Kathy Lee Gifford, please. And she said, I said, I'll give you my credit card number if you think this I'm bogus in any way. And she said, just give me your phone number. What's your name? Deandra Stevens. And I gave the number. Honey, I had passed out. Maybe 4 hours later, she hits me. Deandra, wake up. It's them from the telethon. They're calling you. So, you know, I woke up like, oh my God. Hello? Is this Deandra Stevens? Yes? Is this Kathy Lee Gifford? She says, well, guilty. Yeah, it's me. I go, no, really? Really? Oh, my God, Kathy, I have been meaning to say this to you for so many years. You are a pain in the fucking ass, bitch. Every day you get on that fucking TV. I went in. I called to everything but a child of God. Mind you, she probably was so shocked she didn't hang up. Because nobody ever says shit to famous people like this.
Yeah.
You know, when you read them, they are in shock because no one ever talks down to them. No one. You're just wonderful. You're fabulous, Mr. So-and-so. Yeah. And she said, you're a horrible person. And I said, and you're a miserable cunt. Click. So the next day, she comes on the TV. She comes on TV on Monday with the Regis. What did you do this weekend? Well, she talked about it. She said, ooh. I had a telethon and it was wonderful. And this happened and this happened. And we raised X amount of dollars. But there was this one miserable person who called in and said the most heinous things to me. And I said, I don't think so. Click. So I got on the phone and tried to call the show and go, you're a liar. I hung up on you. You did not hang up on me. And, you know, I never did it. Oh, it was forgotten. I don't hate her so much anymore. You know, she's all right. She deserves a place on the earth, but over there.
Now, Deandra, since you grew up in New York City, you probably were around when the Studio 54 kind of started exploding.
Yes. I used to hang out in front of Studio 54 waiting to see Frosty.
Did you ever get inside?
I got inside twice during its heyday. Mind you, I'm 15 years old. And then in the 80s, they reopened and one of the cast members in Dreamgirls gave me his VIP card, and I used to go every Thursday as a young sissy. But I missed it in the heyday, but I was on the outside watching. I saw everyone in the world. And one of the famous stories is Beth Meyerson came out one night and said, why are you out here? Does your mother know where you are? Well, she sleep. I sneak out. I get back home. She never notices that I even came here. So it's real cold. Go buy you a hot cocoa or something. And she said, do you know how to do the freak? I said, of course I do. Would you teach me? Would you come to my office and teach me how to do the freak? And she gave me a phone number. And of course I never did it because whenever I told the story to like a cousin, said, that was racist. She just said that because you were black. Well, duh. I mean, I don't think it was racist. But I was a kid.
You would just escape the house and just hang out on the street and just watch people.
I escaped. I would go out. My mother would go to bed like 10-ish by 11. And I would go out and then I would be back by, I don't know, 2, 3. And then I'd get up like 7, go to school.
Wow.
And one time she caught me.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, and then I used to take pictures. I had a little Instamatic camera and I would take pictures. So some of the cousins would go, you should see the pictures he has. And so she saw the pictures. And this is why I love, 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 love my mother to the ends of the earth and back and beyond. She kind of was like thinking of all the shit that all her friend's sons was getting into. And she was like, well, if this is all this thing is doing, have at it. Go ahead, feel it.
That's amazing.
And she never chastised me. So
I guess really cool, you know, in terms of your reputation as somebody who reads divas to filth, you were at a party or a club one time, and one of Madonna's dancers, Jose Luis, who toured with the Blonde Ambition tour, ran into you and said, "You must come to my party." How did that work?
Okay.
Because you met Madonna.
I don't like Madonna in a nutshell. Yeah. I don't see it. Like anything that she's ever done, I've seen it done better.
Yeah.
She's just brought it to the masses, and I think that's her only talent. I don't think she's pretty. I don't think she's a great dancer. We all know she can't sing a note. You know, she moves well, but she just seemed to have captured the attention of the world, except for me.
Yeah.
And so... Lewis was dating, my roommate Kareem, rest in peace, was dating Lewis.
Okay.
And Lewis would come to our lovely duplex apartment in Hell's Kitchen when it was still kind of rough. And he would always go on and on and on about Ma. And Ma this and Ma that and Ma. Like, who the fuck is Ma? Madonna. Ugh. Lost interest. And he goes, you don't see it? I said, with bifocals, satellite dishes, telescopes, I can't receive it. No. But if you met her, I go, I don't think I want to meet her. No. Yeah. I'm like, well, I did meet her. I used to see her in the clubs and when she was first starting out all the time. But, you know, whoever would thought that was going to do that? You know how that is. Mm-hmm. So Lewis said, no, girl, have you met her? So Lewis or Kareem would hang out with Lewis and Madonna, and he would come and tell the Madonna stories. Like, she's cool and she's funny and she reads. Oh, she reads. I was like, very nice. I don't care. So I was calling her Madudu then. And he told her that it was told over dinner that Kareem's roommate hates you, calls you Madudu, doesn't see you. She could not believe it. She said, how can a black faggot drag queen hate me? I have to meet this person. Talk about an ego. And so...
Well, part of it is like Madonna always likes to tit-a-tat with a brilliant, sharp mind, right?
Well...
She's no stranger to conflict.
She wants to be liked, too.
Yeah.
So then my friend worked for Pace Gallery.
Yeah.
And was instrumental in her buying an $8 million mm-hmm. Picasso. He didn't sell it, but he worked for the person who sold it. So he broke him off a fair chunk of change from his commission. And he brought me this amazing outfit because I wasn't going to go. So we go to Madonna's house. And there she is, all 5 feet, nothing of her. And just me, 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 look at me, look at me, 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 me. And I did this. And when I was this, and everybody loves me. And I'm just like, I don't. And now I don't like her even more. And I'm like, I said, what if I pushed her out of the window? What would happen? I pushed her out the window. Just in the corner, joking, like with her background singing. So she was like, the attention isn't on me. So she goes, Deandra, I hear you like Diana Ross. Oh, I would put on some Diana Ross records, but I don't have any. I said, that's okay, because I don't have any of yours. Eva, the room got silent. My roommate pushes me in the room like, you can't read her in her own house. You can't. I said, let her try it. I will call her everything but a child of God and walk gingerly out of the door. So we're in the room where the Picasso is. And I had like a satin bucket purse. It was a small Picasso. I said, what if I poke this thing out of the frame and roll it up and take it? What would there happen?
You go, poke it again.
That's the one with the profile of the woman to the sides. That,
you know, I can't remember what it looked like. I remember it was small. It was in scale. It was really small. Mm-hmm. It could have been rolled and put in my bucket purse. And we were laughing, and she came in the room and went, what's so funny? I was like, ugh. We went back into the other room. So long story short, then I wanted to meet Sandra Bernhardt,
yeah.
But Sandra Bernhardt never showed up because she had chopped her, so goodbye.
Because for a short period of time, Madonna and Sandra Bernhardt were actually romantically involved.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sandra Bernhardt later says that Madonna was dating her for a little publicity.
And that she described Madonna as soulless.
Yeah.
Without soul.
I agree. So fast forward, we left the party and then we went to like a big party downtown at Palladium. Connie was at the door and Connie had just walked from Mugler and Naomi Campbell was shady to her. So I'm arriving at the party. Naomi's leaving. I'm like, Naomi! And Naomi knows me for whatever reason. Princess Deandra! I said, come here, baby. There's somebody I want you to meet. And I took her to Connie and her face just dropped and she let go of my hand and then ran in the other direction. Everybody laughed. So anyway, I'm at this party. Everybody's talking about Madonna. Like, you went to Madonna's house. And I'm going, I don't care. It's horrible. I'm the lone Madonna hater. So a few weeks later, Joan Rivers' show comes on. And she's doing gossip. She goes, so Madonna had this party over the weekend. She had her extravaganzas friends and the voguing friends. The drag queen stole her lingerie. Fire came out of every one of my offices. Like, oh, I never took nothing from that hateful bitch. Then my phone started ringing. So I'm thinking, well, I'll talk about her if you pay me. The star offered me $50. I'm like, you can keep that baby. So I never said anything at the time because I'm not just going to spill the story for nothing. So I get this gig for the AIDS. It's like the dance-a-thon at the Javits Center.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And each hour, you know, well, I was assigned a number. And you come out like the girls in the boxing matches holding the numbers up. And I was assigned hour number 3. So I got there in enough time, you know, to go to the green room and, you know, powder that mug. And they came and said, Deandra, hi, would you be willing to do hour number 4? I was like, well, I'm here now. Why? Well, Madonna would like to do number 3. Hell no. Let that bitch do number 4. I'm doing number 3. That's what you hired me for. They were shocked. But Madonna, I said, I heard you the first time. I don't see that bitch with bifocals, that marginally talented, non-beautiful, non-rhythmic hoe can do 4. I'm doing 3. Thank you very much. They went, she said no on the walkie-talkies. She said no.
She said
so
no.
I'm standing there and they're like, fuck that queen. 10, 9, 8, I hear this thunderous applause. It's Madudu. She goes, there's some drag queen backstage mad at me, but I snatched her number and I'm bringing it.
Oh.
So she had the number 3.
Security. She had the number 3. So security, they said, get Deandra away from Madonna. Get Deandra. I could hear them saying it on the walkie-talkies. And they said, Deandra, come to the green room. We have a bottle of champagne for you. They took me on the golf court, which, you know, was fancy. I felt cute. So as soon as I'm getting ready to walk into the green room. Here comes Madudu walking down this long hallway. I guess she took an elevator. And she's walking down the long hallway. And I'm standing and I'm winding up the snap. And I lean down because I told you before, she's 5 foot nothing. And I called that hoe everything but a child of God. I'm clapping and snapping in her face, and the security is looking at me like, but if you touch her, it's a wrap. So I didn't touch her, but I called her a choice number of things, and I'd do it again.
And so what was her reaction?
She was gagging. she was like crouching, and every time like I would snap and clap, she would wince back. She was gagging because the people don't read those people. No one ever says, Madonna, you're an asshole. Like, it doesn't happen.
They don't say no to Madonna. It's everything is yes, 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 but Madonna, right?
So Princess,
yeah, go ahead.
Oh, so, you know, in terms of like your anger management coach, what advice do they have for you?
I don't have any anger management. Years ago, I remember there was another incident. I was supposed to be on the cover of Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
And then David LaChapelle magically erased me after I spent a day of my life with that hideous faggot with the mullet. And
are you talking about David LaChapelle or somebody else?
Yes, David LaChapelle. And then he came to Lucky Chang's acting like we were the best of friends. I said, really, faggot? I ordered an apple martini and doused him right in the face with it.
Wow.
Burns.
And then they named it after me. And then he called the owner saying, I'm going to sue you. And then she said, well, then I'll just tell Page Six why you came here looking for cocaine. Love that.
Ooh.
So obviously that didn't happen. But, you know, I've seen him since. And I'm like, I got vengeance was mine. I got him back. Like you tried me. I tried you back. I have a thing. And yeah. I don't go up to people starting trouble. I do not. But if you start it, I will finish it. You can believe that.
Honey, red
start it, bitch.
Read
I'll finish it.
HRH.
So if anyone says that I'm a bully, I don't bother people for no reason. Like that hideous Michael Musto tries it all the time.
What does he try?
She should try looking in the mirror, and when the glass breaks, eat the glass. Put her misery. But
who
she's
named
always
you?
Trying it on my time, and I just don't understand it. Actually, I know when it started. When I told you I went to go see that hideous Diana Ross reunion thing, he was sitting right next to me as I was heckling. Out of all the seats in Madison Square Garden, I end up sitting next to that. What are the odds? So, anyway.
I think he did write an article about you when that happened, right?
He made up some story how I hit him in the stomach, but I did it playfully like Diana. Like, she poked me in the stomach with her heel. No, I tapped him with the heel.
Well, it's like, you know, those women in those John Waters movies. Careful, honey. I sue and bruise easily. what was it, you know, in the heyday of these clubs, there was a lot of great drugs and a lot of fun times to be had. Stay up.
And they were.
To the late hours.
And they were.
What was it like doing drugs with Lady Bunny?
I heard this story. I don't remember doing drugs with Lady Bunny.
So here's the story that I want to see if you. I want to hear you weigh in on this. There's a story. I can't remember who told me the story, but that she and RuPaul often would drop hits of acid at a club. And that I guess RuPaul was like at one time said that he was like microdosing acid for an entire year. Lady Bunny loved to fuck with RuPaul, and she would go and other people too. And she would go around the club to the people who were high, and she'd lean in and said, "The devil's gonna get you."
That's Bunny.
But you never had that experience.
Yes, Bunny would always like say like weird shit in your ear when she was full, and I would ask other people, "What the fuck did she say?" Because you know, like the club is loud and there's music and stuff, and she would always like say something you know you can't comprehend, and then run off.
Yeah,
that was her.
So she's always been that way.
Bunny's always been has always had a strange but wonderful, amazing sense of humor, like. You know, the way that she says I'm her favorite or one of her favorite lip sync artists. She's been also one of my favorite drag queens, especially from my era, because, like I say, we were from a group of very talented queens. Like, it wasn't just about the flash. There was substance. Like, everyone had their thing that they did well. Like, mine was impersonation. Some people, they had, like, the gimmicks and then, you know, the take. The take on the popular songs, the word escapes me. The parody, the song parodies. Mm-hmm. Some people had that. Some people had amazing looks. Some people were really funny. It's really avant-garde. Really, but whatever you did it to perfection. And maybe these queens are doing that now because I ain't really checking for these bitches. But in my day, you know, that was no.
Well, do you think that it's if you weren't good at anything, you didn't do it? Or why do you think that, like, it was kind of a self-selecting thing?
Well, I would think that people would do that. Actually, at the Boy Bar, Matthew would see your strengths, and he would make you hone your strengths. Like, that doesn't work for you. You need to do this. Red hair doesn't serve you. You should be blonde. Mm. You shouldn't be a brunette. You should be a redhead. And he was always
like
right.
The Reddit of his day.
No, in the sense that, you know, you guys were really like cultivating your performance skills and looks because, you know, you were living in a world where you had everything stacked against you. And so you really had to sort of sharpen your claws.
You know, it didn't feel like that at the time because I find that when you're in this, you're in like a little bubble. Mm-hmm. You're just in a bubble. And we felt so invincible being downtown that when I started to get higher paying gigs, I would always, you know, I'm there and they would go, "Can you keep it down? Can you please not drink? Can you please?" I had to learn how to reevaluate my way of just being. you know, because, you know, you had to, I've had some amazing gigs.
You were able
so.
To see the world. I mean, you know, like Misunderstood was telling me through Screaming Queens, you performed pretty much
in Costa Rica,
everywhere, Croatia.
Yeah, well, I was
Cuba.
Well, she, I will give her, I never performed in Cuba, but I performed in Costa Rica and Haiti. I performed in Haiti.
What do you do in Haiti?
Tina Turner and Diana Ross for this woman who showed up with, well, she didn't show up. Her assistant showed up, and it was a bulletproof SUV, and with a bodyguard. And when I got to meet her, you know, it was a surprise. But she sat with me and we chatted. And she told me the story how she was kidnapped. And I was like, what? And it was, that was one of the
kidnapping
the experiences.
Is fairly common in some of the developing world. Like most,
And she said it like, you know, like you had that bar mitzvah. I got kidnapped. Like she told the story like it was such a common thing. And I thought that was funny. But
were you
had
ever
a beautiful
worried,
home.
Like, or scared? I mean, because, you know, you're this big drag queen traveling around the world.
When they got me at the airport and we were driving, mm-hmm. you know, I kind of cracked the window and I'm looking. It just looked like a war zone. And she saw the trepidation on my face. And she said, don't worry, it's bulletproof. And the driver's also security. And I said, what the fuck did I get myself into? And then we drive into this concrete wall with two armed guards, and behind the wall was the most idyllic little, the word escapes me, but it was just a beautiful, beautiful, lovely,
like a villa?
Compound. It was quaint, but it was fabulous. It was maybe five or six rooms, but they were like football size rooms. And then it was like on the water, and it was just greenery, and it was lovely. But I'm like, you have to live behind a concrete wall, though. I don't know. Mm. Like, what do y'all people do for fun? She goes, things like this. It's a little group of people. They all entertain and they all try to one up the other. And what can you do? So she goes, we fly people in. We have theme parties. I'm like, so there's no nightclubs, no bars. She goes, no.
And because of your performance as Tina Turner is like what you're most famous for, I imagine that.
Diana Ross. I do Patti LaBelle too. Patti's one of my big ones.
We'll get to that in a second. So, but in terms of Tina Turner.
Me. Okay, go with Tina. Go ahead.
So the Tina Turner documentary, and this is why your name keeps popping up. So the Tina Turner documentary just launched on HBO. And we were watching it, and so we did a podcast about it, and we dug up all this wonderful tea about Tina Turner that's not in the movie. And one of them is that she and Patti LaBelle hate each other's guts.
Well, Patti, I just, you know something, after all these years, I just learned that tea recently. Tina shaded Patti at Live Aid.
Yes, mm-hmm. in 1985.
Patti never forgot it, and she doesn't act like she did. She still said something kind of shady recently.
Yeah,
and I was surprised. Well, Patti, which had just come off, and Tina and Mick were going to go on next, or like almost next, and she saw her, was like, "Oh, hi, girl!" And Patti said, "Ooh, don't touch me. You're moist,
darling." She used the word darling.
She threw the door, darling, don't touch me, you're moist.
Yeah.
And then she goes, and she should have said, and I can also be Ike, knock. Then Mick hugged her, like, Patti, you did your thing. And Patti's very sensitive. Like, when I used to hang around Patti a lot, Patti told some great stories backstage, which I'm not going to repeat. But Patti... It's good that Patti has her day in the sun.
Well, that's the thing about, like, Patti LaBelle always wants to be loved by these divas. And
because she knows that she could sing better than them bitches. Like, let's have a singing contest.
Like, she's reaching
out
to Aretha Franklin, and Aretha Franklin is rejecting her. She's reaching out to Tina Turner, and Tina Turner says, no, darling, you're moist. You know, so part of it is like, and it's interesting because, you know, you remember the situation with the Reverend James Wright's Chanel with a Patty's with sweet pies. Potato pies, yeah. Right? He was begging for her to recognize him and see him, and Patty was like,
She denied him as long as she could.
Yeah.
I sold those pies all by myself.
And so then it was T.S. Madison's video that sent the public outrage out there when T.S. Madison said, oh, honey, you did not do this on your own. You need a new attitude.
Was in the Walmart just sitting there, honey. Let it be known. Then when James Chanel did that video, don't do it, Miss Patty, because you know.
And so she was forced, I guess, or felt the pressure enough to invite Reverend James Wright Chanel on tour with her. And so she
invited him for several dates. Yeah. She gave him Louis Vuitton bags.
Used.
She should have cut.
By the way,
those were used luggage.
No, they weren't used. They were new.
I got receipts. You
heard
me.
We heard from a reliable source that they were previously owned.
Yeah.
Miss Patty, that shady girl. That's shady, Miss Patty.
Well, it's a way of it's a very nice way of saying, please go.
Yeah.
It's time for you to go.
This is your luggage. Put your shit in it. Get out.
You know something, as much as I love Patty LaBelle was very shady to me once at a concert, and I was shocked.
What'd she do?
And I took my niece to see her in Atlantic City in 2005, 2006. I had been going to see Patty like 10, 15 years earlier all the time with the Patty LaBelle hair, the whole thing for free. I went to one concert, Patty lived. She said, come backstage. She goes, what's your name, baby? Whenever I come to town, come and do this. But I would go wherever I could get to her because I was loving the experience. And so, like I say, it was the opposite of what Diana was doing to me. Patty was embracing and loving me. So then, you know, the management changed and, you know, the person that handles the free tickets and stuff, I couldn't get to anymore. So I would buy a ticket here and there. So I took my niece to see her in Atlantic City. You know, you bribe the bitch, you sit in the first tables. And, you know, she called me up for Lady Mom a lot. And then she started telling these gay jokes and queen jokes. This bitch was sweating. The lace front was coming undone. And I put my hand on my hip and I leaned in. I said, I don't know what you're feeling, but if I get a hold of that mic, I'm going to tell the audience what you look like. And she gagged and I sat down and she had like the troubled look on her face. Like, oh, she used to call me Sterling. Like, Sterling, I'm sorry. And then my niece was like, what was that? So then I'm thinking, okay, she used me for fodder to make the crowd laugh, which is okay. I get it. I didn't get it while it was happening. But okay, I get it. I'll be the butt of the joke. Because for all the hundreds of times that it was a love-in, I'll be the joke. But Miss Stingletta, bitch, no. Like, it was a shock. So then she sang my favorite song. And it's a song that she never usually sings. And she sang it, and she sang it. She stood right over me and sang it to me. It's like, I'm sorry, baby. Aww. And I was like, bitch, you can do no wrong. Just glue down your lace front, and you good.
What was the song?
Little Girls.
That's
my
so sweet.
favorite song by Patti LaBelle.
We heard that part of her rider is on stage, they have to have 18 blue towels so that she can, you know, because she sweats, right? And then she wants to wipe it off, but she doesn't want the makeup to be seen on the towel. So that's why it's got to be blue.
Why doesn't she get brown or black? Because I only use colored towels. I get that.
Yeah.
But I have blue ones, but I have a lot of black towels.
Well, because if it's too good at hiding the makeup, then you don't know if the towel, you already used a towel. So you always want a fresh towel.
Well, if you take makeup on the white towels, it really never completely gets that brown out. I don't know what the fuck they put in that brown foundation, but she stays. She gets it's very end on telling you.
It's earth. It's soil. It is good earth.
I'm really gagging that those bags were used. James, see, James Wright Chanel is better than me because I would have did a post reading the bitch.
He was very grateful for the experience, and you know this is tea from a reliable source. We do have receipts. However,
I do not see. That, I'm one of those people that I do not. I'm not one of those fans that will doubt that those bitches are fierce and shady, because I've seen it up close that they can get in their way and they don't. They hold no prisoners. Like those rabid Diana Ross fans that think that she's so sweet and lovable and reach out and touch. Like, okay, for instance, during her residency before the pandemic ended, she started to have this question and answer segment in the crowd. And I said, I want to go to this concert just to go. She go, yes. I go, Diana, how come you're so frosty? What? You're not very nice, girl.
You said you're that frosty. To her?
No, I would. Like, I really would. Like, I would ask her. Like, so someone said to her one night, like, do you see Mary Wilson and Cindy Bird's song? And this is her answer. She said, no. She goes, I don't. I don't even know where they are. I mean, if Mary Wilson is in the audience right now, I wouldn't even know. And the audience just giggled. That's the shadiest fucking thing to ever say about two people that you stood on their backs to become a star. I was like, you are just fucking shady. And anything that I say and do to you, bitch, you deserve it. So,
so Dreamgirls is real, huh?
The Dreamgirls is more than real. Like I always say, like, why don't any of those Motowners tell the real story? Like I hear they get paid off. Like if some of the real close people, like they're going to get kicked out of their homes or something. They'll pay the mortgage off, but they signed that ironclad DNA. You can't talk about this and you can't talk about me ever.
Well, that's why ever I feel like, you know, in terms of the birth of rock and roll music with Ike and Tina Turner, there's a whole nother movie that can be made about how that band, you know, the Kings of Rhythm came together. And they're very, because the relationship between the members of the band was really, really complicated. Like Tina Turner was dating the saxophone player before she was romantically involved with Ike Turner.
And do you want to hear some other tea that I just heard from from a roadie it's more about Ike and Tina.
Yeah.
He said Tina didn't do drugs, but he said, don't feel sorry for Tina. Because when they fought, sometimes Tina would win, sometimes Ike would win. Because they don't tell that part of the story. And she goes, sometimes Tina would kick his ass.
Well, Tina Turner herself says that when her mother and father were fighting, that her mother usually would pick up a piece of plywood and beat up her father. So,
she probably said that like going hint, hint, and I do that too, but I ain't telling you that because it fucks up the legend. You won't feel sorry for me. But then he told me this other thing that made me go like, whoa. Said that when they toured with the Stones and whomever, Ike used to sell coke to everyone. That was the side hustle. And that he would make Tina carry the coke because no one was going to ever search her. They would always search the guys in the band, but Miss Turner can go through. And I was like, what? I said, that's genius. He goes, come on. They were only paying them X amount of dollars, but Ike made five times that selling them all coke. Love it.
Wow.
Love that. So that's my Tina tea. I want to hear really good things about Tina because I know people that have worked with her, that have made her clothes, and it's all good and sunshine and light, you know?
Well, she's not like Arthur Johns, we dug in deep because we talked to Larry Edwards about who invented the wigs of her 1984 wigs, you know, What's Love Got to Do with It? And Tina claims that in a Mike Wallace interview on 60 Minutes that she did those wigs and that her hair comes from Africa.
Do you know any human hair that comes from Africa made for wigs? I think she was just kind of like, it's not your business. And she's like, where does it come from? And she's just like, fuck you, Mike Wallace, it comes from Africa.
I think that was a calculated, shady answer. Yeah, I do. Right? I think it was very tongue-y. You're going to ask me this stupid-ass question? I'm going to give you this stupider answer.
Well, so we dug in deep, and we found out that Tina Turner met the wig stylist and hairstylist to Farrah Fawcett, the Bee Gees, and Olivia Newton-John from Grease, the movie, on a made-for-TV special with Olivia Newton-John. And it was there that connection was made, and she hired him to give her that new look because they wanted like a punk kind of rock and roll new way.
But in her defense, though, yeah. Once he showed her how to do it, she continued to do it because all the people that I talk with said she does her own hair as she sits and sews pieces in wigs, as she sits and teases and ratties and beats them on the floor. I have 100 stories of people that said she's back there beating up her hair.
With a fork. With a salad fork.
Concert.
Yeah, I guess that Tina Turner's very resourceful, obviously, and certainly knows her wigs and no stranger. You know, Lady Bunny styles her own wigs too, but she buys them from other people too, you know, and it's like, it would make sense that there is a collaboration, there is a process happening.
I always think it's funny how they always have to claim something. Like, yeah. Michael Jackson was taught how to do the moonwalk,
yeah,
but he never reveals that someone came and taught me. Mm-hmm. You know, I might have developed it once they showed me. You know, you do this, you do that, you do that.
Bob Fosse did the moonwalk in that movie, The Little Prince.
Turn it.
Mm-hmm. And you actually, know, if it wasn't for Bollywood
film.
Woman,
I saw a yeah. clip of a show from the Cotton Club. The woman did the moonwalk. She twerked. She did the moonwalk. And she did another one of those dances that the kids do. And I was like, everything old is new again. Look at this bitch breaking it down in 1933. So... there you go.
How's the year been for you? I mean, you know, you've been living in the pandemic in New York City. What's your future going to be like?
It was a challenge.
Yeah.
It was a challenge, but now I feel the world is opening up and I'm actually getting some really cute opportunities. And I did a film that wrapped the day before the pandemic. And so I guess that's going to come out. I'm going to do a book in June. I'm talking to you, wonderful sissies.
Aww.
And, you know, like life is okay. I saved some money and the government, that money that government tossed came in handy. Like, you know.
Amen, sister. Shit. You know,
it's been a learning experience and an adjustment. But come on, when you get to be on the other side of 50, you're used to some shit going down. So you just have to roll. You like Dorian says, you got to roll with the punches. You got to keep it moving.
Who gave you the title HRH, Her Royal Highness?
Well, back in the day when the boy boy beauties were exploding and setting New York City on fire, we used to do like a monthly show at the Saint and then the Tunnel. And, you know, it was a bunch of, everyone had their characters and I did Frosty and I did Frosty and Tina or Frosty and Patty. And Connie did Donna, Grace, Connie can do anything. So Glamour, to close the show, Glamour Moore and Connie would do Enough is Enough. Mm-hmm. Where in the end they would like literally beat each other up. It was the showstopper. So Connie went to Paris, her first time going to Paris. And we were booked to do the show. And so I had to do my parts and Connie's parts. And by the time we got to the finale, Glamour Moore was Barbara Streisand and she literally beat my ass. I was going, girl, you're taking it a little seriously. Like I was beat, battered and bruised. And I came off stage huffing and puffing and Matthew was like, you pulled it off. You pulled it off. Oh, my little princess. He was like, Princess Deandra, that's your new name. Because I was just Deandra. So then the Princess Deandra took off, and then he got all highfalutin, and he added to HRH, which I hated at the time, because I thought people would think, oh, she thinks she's Sophia. What's that HRH about? But it was Matthew. And for years I hated it, but now I revel in it, and I love it, and God damn it, I've become it.
Thank you, Matthew Casting. And where is he today? Is he still with us?
Matthew's still with us. Mm-hmm. I believe he's living in Arizona. He was moving around for a minute. I had a friend recently that was coming across country. Gan Johnson, hello. And he was like, I'm in Arizona. Do you have Matthew's number? I was like, no, I don't. But, you know, if you do, call him. Tell him I said, hey. And like, he's one of those people. He'll call. When he wants to be in touch, he'll call you. He's there. He's always there, and it's always great to hear from him. We did like a boy bar reunion podcast thing, a Zoom. It wasn't a podcast. It was a Zoom during last year, during the middle of that pandemic, honey. It was beautiful to see all the old girls getting together. So many of us are still here and some aren't, but a lot of us still are here kicking.
Well, you know,
queens of a certain age, we have an arrested development. we just will not sit our asses down and get old. And I find that a lot of the people, the performers that I came up with, they all seem to have that. Like they, you know,
well, drag, keep it moving. Drag seems to be one of those things. If you get into it, if you get out of it pretty early, or you just, it becomes your life, right?
I guess, yeah. But the thing I'm finding, like, I'm going to have to mix it up because I'm starting to gain weight. And, you know, my feet are saying, no, girl, no, girl. Like, the heels are just, like, killer now. I'm not going to wear the fucked up shoes like Frosty wears now. But
no flats?
I don't know. No, she wears these, like, stacked kind of Herman Monster looking things, and they're very unattractive. Like, she Herman picks up Monster. That dress and you go, she used to wear the best shoes, like the best.
I'll tell you this, for the big figured girls like myself who are getting into their 50s, if you want to wear heels, go to a dance shoe store and get yourself
some tango
shoes. Because the tango shoes are open heeled, and they are basically they're orthopedic. They're designed to
move. Miss Thing, those don't look cunty. They look like what they are. I don't know.
But at least you're wearing high heel shoes, you know.
Put some jewels
exactly. At least for comfort, you know.
Because ain't nobody going to, from a runaway horse in the backstage, no one, you know, the back
audience. Well, you know, my whole thing was I was going to wear really longer dresses so you didn't see my feet. But then I have really good legs, and I do a lot of leg stuff. And the legs are still perched.
Did you ever see Mae West's shoes, the kind of shoes she would wear?
That's ridiculous.
She would wear like these lifts, basically like, you know, platform shoes. You know, and then she would have these little heels that would poke out underneath her dress that were fake.
I saw, and I was like, that is so genius, bitch. But I'm like, how could you even walk? And she was 100, still trying to do that. With her lover, with her black lover, Gorilla. I love that.
And Marilyn Monroe, she would saw off like one of the heels a little bit so she could wiggle.
Yeah, I know.
Isn't
that one
amazing?
Too. Amazing. Really when I did Tuong's Fu, I had an elaborate costume. So they gave me one of those leaning boards like Marilyn used to have. I felt like such a star.
Oh, so you wouldn't sit down, but you could lean.
So I could lean, yeah, and it was very comfortable. It was padded, and then like the arm parts were padded. Mm. I was like, okay, I could do this.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, we're so glad that you're still here with us, Princess Deandra.
I am. So this is going to get all edited up, I imagine.
Oh, no, we're putting it on cut, honey.
Fausto and I are doing. We're working on a podcast, The Greatest Drag Reads of All Time. We're trying to pick ones that are like on film or documented and stuff like that. Do you have a favorite read of all time?
Well, I used to love Dynasty. And one of my favorite reads on Dynasty is Blake was sick or something, and Alexis just comes unannounced, bursting into the house. Oh, it's Blake! Blake! And then Crystal was like, no one invited you here. So how dare you come to my... She's grabbed her by the elbow like, you have to go. You have to leave my house. And she snatched her arm and said, your house. This is my house. When you live in a shack somewhere. She goes running to Blake. I love that. Oh. I just love that.
Well, one of my favorite reads of all time takes place in the movie Car Wash from 1976, where
I know the read.
Antonia Fargas as Lindy turns to this guy who's kind of like bullying her, and she says, "Honey, I'm more man than you'll ever be, and more woman than
and
you'll
more
ever
woman than you'll get. Ever get or have." One of those. That's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah, and I'm like wondering whatever happened to Antonia Fargas.
I think he's still with us. Yeah. He died. He just recently died because I remember seeing him you know, somewhere talking about, you know, the golden days.
And I guess that was Joel Schumacher who did the movie Batman and Robin, made this really gay
and
character.
The Wiz.
And The Wiz.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's gay.
Yeah.
Not anymore. He's dead.
Yeah. Well, he's dead. Oh, he was gay, dear. He was gay.
He's like, well, you know what Batman and Robin needs? Nipples.
Lots of nipples.
But yeah, he also is the one who's like, my name's Poison Ivy, what's yours? Mm. Like, there's a lot of lines from that movie that get quoted by drag queens today. But see, what we're trying to find out is, like, you know, like in the movie The Queen, where, you know, she says, look at her makeup, she's terrible. My God.
Now that's one of the reads of all time, darling. Yes. She went off.
Well, that was the read that could be heard around the world. That I think Stonewall took place because of that. I mean, it was like that the anchor was like, oh shit, you better take cover, honey, because that storm clouds are coming. You know, it founded the houses, you know, it's like, because they were basically, you know, Crystal LaBeija.
Well, I don't think that was when they started, because when I was doing my history, that, yeah. No, the houses went as far back as the 30s.
But in terms of Crystal LaBeija, she was really ticked off that she didn't win that contest, and she felt that racism was one of the main factors of it. And so that's what inspired her to create her house.
That was,
and that's where the whole stuff from Paris.
It was very the BET
forward.
Awards of its day.
Yeah.
Well, people say that, you know, she founded the house system, but you're saying it went back to, like, the ball scene.
She
it goes back a long time.
Founded the modern incarnation of that, but no, it goes back a pinch further.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, people have always been getting together and entertaining each other for all kinds of reasons.
Yeah.
But in terms of that intent and that concept, that all draws its lines to the Queen. And the, you know, these filmmakers just happen to be there. And, you know, Harlow, and this is, I'm curious, because you're a New York gal, Harlow, who won, whose makeup was terrible, she later transitioned. She said no to offers from David Bowie and Truman Capote to appear in films of theirs. And later, she just basically, she's still alive to this day. She opened up a restaurant called Harlow's, which I wish she would have said, the food is not terrible.
unlike my makeup, the food is not terrible.
But I wonder, like, has anybody eaten at that restaurant? Anybody heard of it?
I don't even know it, and I'm just hearing this for the first time. The only people from that movie that I know are Crystal, and Jack, because I knew Jack, Sabrina. I knew Sabrina well.
Flawless Sabrina, yes.
Sabrina would always invite me to come watch the movie at her home, and I never did, and I regret that like forever, because I was so that you have to see the movie with her, so she could be sitting there with the commentary and the understory. And I'm like, yeah, I missed it. That was.
Do you feel like she ever regretted not giving Crystal LaBeija the grand prize?
She says it wasn't up to her. Like, they voted. It was a vote. She claims it was up and up. She said it to me.
But does she have any lament that she didn't win? Any regrets about
it? That I couldn't tell you. She never, you know, girl, I regret she didn't do that. She just said that, you know, they voted. It was
Andy
an
Warhol
thing.
And a couple of other people, right? Yeah. Who else is on
that? But you know, it's the times, and it's like they look at the black, before the 70s, they look at the black girl like, you're cute, but. Like, it's amazing, like, when they get through that, wow, that many people, like, when Hattie McDaniel got through, when Diane Carroll won the first Tony, like, the voting process was like, was she just that good? They're like, give it to the Negress. Like, well, I always wonder how that works.
It would have been a sensation, a commotion, if Crystal LaBeija had won then, right?
Well, I mean, by then, and you would think that in that world, like, the racism would have been less or lax or, you know, not as it was in the real world. Because you think in the subcultures, we get beat down so much. We're open, we're loving and accepting. But I found that queens are racist. And it's shocking when it happens. But yeah, queens can be racist.
And what would that movie be if Crystal had won? You know, it would have been a feel-good kind of movie. Like, it's that drama is the movie.
I was told this. I don't know if I should bring it up. Oh, what the hell? I did wig stock a few years ago, and for whatever reasons, I didn't get to go on, and I was furious.
Why didn't you get to go on?
She kept telling me, "You're next, you're next, you're next." And then Bunny said, "This is the last song." And I was like, "Oh, really?" And I was fired up. Fired up.
You were full.
And I kind of went on. I was a little bit, because I don't see. I'm getting brain freezes. Contrary to popular belief, I never perform drunk. I'm a drinker, and I'm a world-class double-fisted, double-toed drinker. But I'll take a sip or three or four, and then because I can't perform inebriated, high, drunk. Pick a poison. I just don't, because I have to have, I'm thinking, I need the clarity, I got to hear the music, I have cues and timing, and it's all in my head, and I can't fuck with that, because not that I've never done it, and I'm always unhappy with the performance and the results. So I wasn't drunk. I was drinking, but I wasn't drunk. And anyway, I didn't go on, so I kind of went on and just kind of danced behind Bunny and, carried on as though I was doing my number. Because I was like, I'm not all done up like this and nobody's going to see me. Fuck that. So then when I left the stage, I went to the dressing room and I started reading God and Man. And someone said, they should film this. Mm-hmm. This will make the movie.
So you had your own Crystal LaBeija moment.
I had a huge Crystal LaBeija moment. And I remember waiting for the Uber. And I was kind of laughing because I was like, oh, you just showed your ass, bitch. But then I was like, well, they fucking chopped me. And But anyway,
did it make it into Wigstock?
No, I don't. I've never watched it, but I heard that they show clips of me from other Wigstocks, the pictures and stuff. But I don't think from that night, there's no footage of me. Nothing of my outbursts. Nothing of my reads and chows and. No, it just happened. But it happened. I'm over it. It was very mm-hmm. similar to the Crystal LaBeija thing. That's mm-hmm. the only reason I brought it up.
Was it the talk of the town?
Oh, it was the talk of the town, baby. Because queens would run up to me on the street. And no one vilified me to my face. But queens that I do admire say, yeah, DeAndra, you should have been on there. You didn't deserve that. And and all the queens, they DM'd, a lot of DMs, like, you were wronged, you would have made the night, I was waiting for your number, and all of that, so.
Well, that's the thing about, I feel how we've changed how we perceive and use drag and gender non-conventionality in entertainment, is that it's, instead of reading people to filth, drag queens are reading books to children.
Oh my god, yeah, that was good, because I was sitting here sipping on my Perrier going, where's this queen going with this?
Well, part of it is
see that coming. That was good.
Well, and part of it is, I think, the drag has allowed us to manage the frustration and the anger and the feelings we have. Great art allows us to use that and make it something constructive, something beautiful. And yes, that's baby. That's my concern about the future right now, is that, our ability to manage our anger, our fear, our frustrations with art is being co-opted by television and these corporations. And we don't have the ability to, show all our feelings out there.
I always find that all the cool shit, the origins of it are with drag and trans, LGBTQ. Because like I mentioned, my friend Dina Marie, when I first met her, she just is one of those unique people, just are a unique personality.
Yeah.
Like everything she said and did, you never saw before. And I was drawn to her by this, and she kept saying fantasy. Like everything was, that fantasy. Oh, you want me to do that? Oh, so you want the full fantasy. That's not my fantasy, Miss Thing. And one day I said to her, what's with the fantasy? What is that? And she explained, like, you know, because it's the fantasy. And it was, she was a long, drawn-out explanation, which was kind of personal. I can't really get into. But slowly, I saw this word take over the vernacular of Queens. I had never heard it up until that point. 2 years later, tops, every queen was saying it. They say it on the Drag Race. I saw the commercial. They're saying, oh, you want the fantasy? And I just go, imagine if she would have copyrighted the fantasy. She'd feeling be sitting home feeling that she said every incarnation of fantasy, feeling the fantasy. You're giving the fantasy. Oh, not the full fantasy, not that fantasy. Oh, I'm feeling my fantasy tonight. She said it all.
I would see in the ad for sex workers.
If T.S. Madison got paid for all the things she came up with, she wouldn't have to ask money for her mother's birthday.
The same. And she really doesn't really need to do it anyway, but she knows that people are going to give it because I know that hoe got some money. But
listen, she may be, as well as that Chris Rock says, she's rich, she doesn't have wealth.
Rich, she ain't wealthy. She doesn't have wealth.
If Bill Gates woke up with Oprah Winfrey's money, he'd kill himself.
He'd say he was broke. He would kill himself. That's the line.
You know, she's comfortable, but she's not, you know, she's not Bill Gates.
Well, where's my comfort? Shit. I'd like to be comfortable.
Listen, honey, if you got a tip for Miss, you know, the Royal Highness, Princess Deandra, Or the whole 9 inches. What's your PayPal, Venmo, Cash App?
Oh, my God. Send
a self-addressed trapped envelope.
Wait. Hold on a sec. I don't remember. HRH DM is Cash App.
All right.
I don't remember the Venmo. I haven't used it in a while. My Cash App is HRHDM.
Well, send people can just reach out to you on social media, right? Because you're very active on Instagram.
And I'm on Facebook, but like I was said in the other podcast, I really don't like to have strangers as friends because you are the people that report me.
That's true.
Like people that know me know that, you know, I'm a loose cannon and I will say some shit and I will post some shit. So if I don't know you, we've never had a conversation, or you don't reach out to me in a way that as one of these sissies did. I know one of you did. I friended you. I was like, oh, yeah, I know you. Come on in. But on the Instagram, which is a little more freer, everyone's welcome at HRHPD. Come on by.
That's where they're going to report you next. Madonna's going to do it.
Ugh. I've only got reported.
You're gonna be. It's gonna be like the final Seinfeld episode. You're gonna be called into court, and it's gonna be Frosty, Madonna,
and you're all gonna end up in the same jail cell.
And then I go, Frosty, let's whoop her ass. Come
on, Kathy Lee Gifford will be sitting there drinking a glass of white wine, splashing it in your face.
But you know something about Kathy Lee? I said, I would find myself watching that show with her and that bitch drinking, and I would live. I would go, maybe it took your husband dying for you to loosen up, but I like the fact that you are on TV this early in the morning drinking. Go ahead, bitch. Work it out.
You have that in common.
A little moment for the day drinkers.
I only drink after sunset. I drink water up until the sunset. Mm. You must stay hydrated. Mm.
Lubricate before you read them.
All bets are off.
That was my favorite moment of Pose. Is really when Dominique Jackson was reading that Becky to Filth, and her friends are like,
"Wasn't that gorgeous?"
That was the best moment. Mm. Yeah,
so that was good.
I wonder what's going to happen with the third and final season. Are we going to get some more of that?
You know, probably it's going to end all nice and rosy and happily ever after. They all going to get jobs. Like they all not going to die of AIDS.
They're probably going to die.
So who do you think is going to die? Who's going to die?
Well, I don't know.
Where can we twist the knife hardest?
I think that they all should like get opportunities and like, you know, as the world opens up, they should show that the world's opening up and they're getting opportunities. And come on.
No.
I was just watching Finding Your Roots with Dr. Henry Gaines, one of my favorite shows.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he did Janet Mock. And I was like, this is just progression.
Like, she's related to Hitler.
I don't think he did say. Did you know that? Do you know that?
Did you see RuPaul? Think, yeah. RuPaul's related to, was it Cory Booker? And she was just RuPaul was like, oh, that's interesting.
She didn't give a fuck.
See, I didn't see that one. Oh my God. I missed that one.
I think that's the most entertaining show.
One of my favorite one is when he says to Tina Turner, you want to hear your breakdown? And you got 2% of this and 3% of this and 0 Native American. And her face just went ka-clunk. And then he explained to her that Black people said they were Native American because it was a stigma, was you were a mulatto, the reason why you were a mulatto. So they just kind of said they were Native American just to throw off the scent. And, you know, it's a thing. And she was just shocked, like, I don't believe this. Like, I'm sure she said, turn those cameras off.
You better be good to me.
So that was one of the fun. Like, she couldn't, the shock in her face, she couldn't hide it. Like, she's like, what?
Don't tell me about the rules. I made the rules. We had a deal, and you broke the deal. Bust the deal, face the wheel.
Bust the deal, face the wheel.
Oh, that's another thing that drove me crazy about the documentary.
One man enter, two men leave.
Yeah, that's my sex life. But
work.
But you know, it's like, why didn't they talk about Mad Max more? She did all her stunts.
I said that backwards. Two men in tow, one man leave. Sorry. What happened was that those two guys were hired because they were award-winning documentarians, and they said they didn't know anything about Tina Turner. They just took the it was a job to them.
But wouldn't they pick up the phone and at least call Hot Chocolate, you know?
And once they started doing the research, they were fascinated with the Ike stuff because she didn't really want to do that angle. But of course, at this point,
so much about Ike already, you know,
at this point, she's old. She done been so sick. It's by the grace of God. She's still perched. That she just went, how much you paying me? Do it.
Well, I think her husband helped produce it, right? Or he was the producer, I think.
But they hired those two.
Mm-hmm. And, they were hired guns.
They were fascinated by that. Like,
well,
what?
I'm going to ask you this. I'm going to ask you this because we talked about it when we kind of covered this too. Is like, I think, and you know, what's your opinion? If you want to answer it, is I feel like they really put a lot of emphasis on Ike beating Tina throughout her entire career because it's a way to kind of pathologize Black men. I'm not saying she deserved it, and of course she didn't deserve it,
but the
American public was so fascinated by it and pushed that agenda rather than focusing on her talent because it was a way to, you know, put down Black men.
That could be well and true, but I always just thought it was a sensationalist thing. It's like, to sell the story. Like, you know, she overcame this and you can too. And, you know, that, you know, you're a survivor, you're the phoenix coming out of the fire. That's the way I take it. But, you know, you could be right. I'm trying to be a little more optimistic, but you're right. I just saw this the one from Saturday Night Live, the fat one that's been there forever.
Keenan Thompson.
That's him.
He's getting his own show.
He has his own show with Don Johnson, huh? He said that he made a conscious decision to not do drag again in 2013, which I didn't notice. But when he said that, I'm like, wow, you haven't done drag in a minute, now that you mention it. And the reporter said, I think that's a good thing you did that because it opened it up. So they hired more Black women after that instead of making you do all the Black women. So you did a good thing. And he just looked at him like, whatever. Yeah, that's what I did. Yeah. Because I saw this whole thing when Dave Chappelle said, not law. Dave Chappelle. No law.
Know the law.
Dave Chappelle.
He the undrenched of said, Apple Martini fame.
he said that. Yeah, they always try to put Black comedians in drag to demasculate them. And it's a thing that's been going on. I never thought about it. Then I thought about all the comedians. And I'm like, oh, shit. They all have done drag. That's right.
Eddie Murphy's like, "How you doing?"
See, I'm a drag. I'm a drag queen, so I don't think it's a disparage. I ain't trying to be masculine no how. So
my first drag queen was Geraldine.
I
loved Geraldine as a kid. Come on, who didn't?
Yeah, we all did.
What you see is what you get.
The devil made me
What you see is what the devil made me do it. I'm gonna get killed and get you. And then I remember when that channel came out, TV Land, I used to tape them every day because I loved seeing Geraldine. I did.
There was a doll, I guess, that was Flip Wilson on one side.
There was a doll.
And you could flip it over.
And you could pull, and you pulled the string and it had lines. It would say things.
I feel like we had that as a kid. Because it would have been the early 70s.
My sister had the Diane Carroll doll.
The Barbie.
And I remember when I was a kid, I went and I stole the Diana Ross doll. I used to hide and play with it. My mother found it and threw it in the garbage. Mm-hmm. And I didn't act like it was gone because I wasn't supposed to have it anyway. So I was like that bitch threw away my doll.
We interviewed a guy who had over 1,000 Barbies, and he came over and he brought the Diane Carroll Barbie with him. And I have a picture with it. And he said the way you can tell the original Diane Carroll Barbie is because over time the hair turned magenta colored. Magenta. So it's very kind of like, you know, bright red fuchsia kind of like color. He goes to like a fake one. The hair is still brown.
Wow. Look at there.
Wow.
Just like RuPaul. Princess Deandra, Her Royal Highness, it is a pleasure talking to you.
It was a pleasure talking to you guys for 2 hours. Where are you guys located?
We live down the block from you. No, we're in Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, you're in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Chi-town.
Have you been?
I've never been to Chi-town.
Oh.
I've been to 6 of the 7 continents.
Well,
5 into 5. I've been to 5 of the 7 continents, and I've never been to Chi-town. Isn't that something?
When the pandemonium is over, you should definitely come and visit.
What did you say?
There are two things. No,
I'm talking to a black person. I can't say pandemic. I have to call it something else.
Pandemonium.
No, the pandemic, girl. When the pandemic is over, Miss Pandemic is over, I'd love to come to Chi-town. I'd love to go to the Bataan.
Oh, yes.
There are three things I want to do. I want to go to the Bataan. I want to have some deep dish pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to get shot.
With bullets.
With bullets.
Other things.
By a gangbanger.
We can guarantee probably 2 of those things.
Yeah, my favorite place to get a deep dish pizza is Lou Malnati's.
Oh.
In fact, one of the last drag queens we had deep dish pizza was with Peaches Christ.
Yes.
All right.
And she bought the pizza.
She did buy the pizza.
Oh.
I love a bitch buys me dinner.
That makes 2 of us, Annie. If it's free, it's for me.
big shout out to Diana Ross's lawyers.
Yes.
Madonna's lawyers. Kathy Lee Gifford's lawyers.
To the paper towel company who cleaned up David Chappelle after he got...
Oh my God. Oh, you know something? When I did Tu Wong Fu, I was actually supposed to be, you know, the study of Wesley Snipes. So I hung out with him a couple of nights. And he told this wonderful story of being at Spago's on the night of the Rodney King's murder. And Diana Ross showed up with her lawyer, and his last name was Coons. Oh, he said, "Really, girl, tonight of all nights, really, girl." but he was a white man named whatever Coons.
That's I have relatives who have that last name.
How do you spell it?
It's with a K.
K-O-O-N-T-Z.
I think it's a Dutch name.
Coons.
Yeah.
Coons. K-O-O-N-S.
Like the artist Jeff Koons.
Like Jeff Koons. Oh. And Koons. You know, Koons. Like Candace Owens. Koons.
Oh, Candace Owens.
Yeah. She's the best. She's best friends with that gay guy from The Bachelor who just came out.
Oh.
Well, is he sleeping with her ex-husband, too?
I guess so. Ooh. He's friends with everybody.
Because I guess, like, think her brother slept with her husband.
That's calculated. Yeah. That's a calculated sissy. I'm sorry. I just can't be mad at him. I'm like, you turned that.
Nobody's feeling it, though. Mm-hmm. Everybody's like, what the fuck is this bullshit?
I'm very grateful.
But she turned it. I really wish I could think of some scheme and some gimmick. I would have gone on The Bachelor, pretended I wanted some of them tunas. And then, like, you know, the whole time I was thinking, God, they all have such ugly dresses.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to talk
to us.
Thank
you for listening to all my bullshit. I haven't told my stories in a minute. You know, I was trying to tell them as condensedly as I can.
If we have all the stories, all the details, we'll be here all week, you know?
Please come back sometime.
Yes, honey.
Her Royal Highness, thoroughly entertained.
So when will this air? How can I share it? How can I?
I'll send you the links. It's available everywhere fine podcasts are found. You just search Feast of Fun, and it'll be there with your beautiful face, Princess Deandra. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then you'll be showing pictures of me as, you know, I'm spewing my lunacy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll use the ones that are not airbrushed as much.
No, I'm fake. I want to use those because what I used to look like.
Season one Drag Race filter, turn it up to 11. Throw on that Vaseline, honey, not just on the lens, all over.
All right.
Thank you, Your Royal Highness. It has been our pleasure.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome.
Take care, love.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye, guys.
Princess Deandra lives in New York City. Check her out on Instagram land, Facebook land, everywhere lands across the land at Princess Deandra, DiAndraHRH, as in, honey, read her.
She has lived the life.
Yes. And that life ain't not over yet. Princess Deandra, you still there?
I'm still here. I don't know if I'm supposed to say something.
You're acting like you're 100,000 years old, but you're at the age now that Tina Turner started her second career.
Wow.
I'm a bit older, but, you know, she did that, right? I don't know how old Bunny is.
5,000 years old.
It's not about the age. No. It's the spirit that you bring forth into the world.
That's right. And listen, you know, it's like your life is, you think it's over. You think your life is on pause, but actually it is just getting started. You learn from Tina Turner. Mm. You can do anything you want to do, honey.
And you look at somebody like Cheetah Rivera, she's still performing.
Yeah. She's like, exactly. You know,
I mean,
80,
you know, as long as you keep dancing, you keep moving, you got it.
Keep on moving, honey. Don't let the COVID scare you. Just wear a mask.
Keep on moving. Long like I need to stop eating because I'm coming for Bunny and the weight. I've never,
you know,
maybe we can revive.
Moo-moos are real easy to make. That's for sure.
Wear flats, moo-moos and a big wig. And
cost,
you're done.
The extra cost of the fabric gets expensive. I would never wear a moo-moo. The design is not.
I would wear an artfully designed caftan, darling. Mm.
Listen, just go to Bed Bath & Beyond and go to the Beyond section.
Do they make them in sequins?
Listen, you get with an E2600 or 9600 or some Gorilla Glue, you just put those rhinestones on there, you look like $1 million, honey. Mm-hmm. Remember, folks, Feast of Fun is made possible because of fierce, fabulous people like you. Go give us a tip or the whole 9 inches at feastoffun.com/donate.
And our Cash App and Venmo is Feast of Fun. Yeah. And the best way to support the show is to become a Plus member, and you get an ad-free experience at feastoffun.com/plus. Or become a member at Patreon, patreon.com/feastoffun.
And just tell your friends about Feast of Fun. Tell them Fausta sent you.
And write a review on Apple Podcasts or Google Play.
Yeah, or just play with me, baby, because I'm a player.
Hey.
Social media, Fausto, hit me up. Slide me some DMs of your D. Because it was my birthday, you know, so I want to feel it.
Feel it.
Feel it. Thank you, Princess Deandra.
Thank you, Princess Deandra.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. This is just never ending, is it?
Thanks for listening.
Turn around and tell me what you see. A never ending story.
Well, it's about to end right now. Goodbye,
love you.
Fellas.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good night. See you next time.
Wow.